Hello and welcome to the Bringing Rural Back podcast, where we help you live a more prepared and sustainable life today so that you can have a better tomorrow, no matter what. This is your host, Greg Carter, and this is episode number 39. Yes. 39 or 40. I'm on the road again, so I'm going to say it's 39. In today's episode, we're going to talk about what's the difference between a home and a homestead. This is based on a question from a guy named Jim, who said he was from Michigan. So I appreciate it, Jim. This entire podcast is kind of based on your question. But before we get into the main topic of the show, let's get our chores done, shall we? I'd like to remind everybody about the Listener Appreciation Event. Swing by the blog, sign up for it. All you got to do is enter your name and email address and promise to share the show. Just like last time, I've got a deal to make with you. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it and consider giving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever directory you have found our show from. If you'll do that, that'll help us a bunch, and it'll help more people get to know about us. And I'm just going to cut it short right there. So, I'm in my truck headed down the highway, headed home. It is a misting rain right now, but it's fairly warm, especially for January. Jim sent this question about what's the difference between a home and a homestead. Now, that's not exactly the way he worded it, but that was the basic, the heart of the question, I guess you could say. So, when you look around, there's a lot of people who have what they call homesteads, and then there are people who have just homes, okay? Well, when you get into the meat of the matter, a home and a homestead are similar but different. Now, what do you mean by that? Okay. A home in the modern world is a consumer. Now, I want to explain that. Oh, Lord, the rain started. The home, you know, you spend all your time, it doesn't generate anything for you. You know, you've got the electric bill, you got the water bill, you got the cable, you got the internet, you got. You got all of these bills and it's just sitting there, and you probably, you know, if you're in especially a suburban environment, everybody's worried about what their yard looks like, and everything's got to be perfect, and there's people that they're not satisfied with their yard, and oh, it's got to look like a golf course. It's got to look just like the golf course down the way. Well, when you do that, then you're spending a boatload of money on chemicals, pesticides, herbicides, fertilizes, what is it, True Green, I think is what they call it. A lot of these people, they buy this big, massive, you know, riding lawnmower to cut their quarter of an acre or half of an acre, or I've seen it actually for a tenth of an acre. Okay? Well, and that doesn't just apply to the small things. You've got folks with an acre, acre and a half. Now, at that rate, yeah, I can kind of see wanting to have a riding lawnmower. But they are not satisfied with the little riding lawnmower that they can get at the department store for, say, $600. They want the super deluxe get back jack. Oh, my stars. You know, be able to mow their yard at 45 miles an hour and do a hairpin turn. I saw a lawnmower last year that was not a commercial lawnmower. It was a residential lawnmower that they wanted $5,000 for. And people were buying them. Now, that just kind of, that's not good. I mean, come on, folks. A lawnmower, $5,000? Unless you're cutting a 10-acre spread, that's just nuts. And even if you are cutting a 10-acre spread, you need to put some animals on that stuff. That way you're not having to cut it as much. My stars, folks. Okay? So, you know, the home is a presentation piece. Everything's got to be just so-so. It's got to be so-so. If it's not, then what would the neighbors think? Okay? Now, I can understand some of that a little, maybe. You know, you don't want your yard to be grown up knee-high. You don't want it, you know, you don't want it to look unkempt. But there are people out there that just, it just drives them crazy to see a dandelion or a clover in their yard. Now, me personally, I love having clover, dandelion, dead nettle, all of these things in the yard. I love it. There's a section of my yard that is wild. It's got elderberry in it, and it's got pokeweed in it and everything like that. Now, I am reclaiming a part of that, but I'm not reclaiming it to grass. Okay? So, you know, a home, it's a, like I said, it's a consumer. It doesn't produce anything for you. It's a presentation piece. And let's just be honest, for a lot of people, it's a status symbol. You know, why else would a brand new couple that's, I don't know, making $70,000 or $80,000 a year want to try to buy a $250,000 home? And we're not talking a $250,000 home or, excuse me, $250,000 for the piece of property, and it's on, say, a 5 to a 15 acre piece of property. No, we're talking a half acre for $250,000 for a newlywed couple that's really just kind of getting started off. We've gotten to that point to where, oh, it's got to have the sitting room, and it's got to have this, and it's got to have that. Just drives me crazy. Now, if you've busted your butt and you've put up your money and you've done all this, I don't mind you having the house that you want at all. But have a piece of property that can be a producer. Okay? So now a homestead on the opposite side, yes, it does do some consuming. You're still going to have your electric bill, and you're still going to have your water bill and your garbage and whatever else that you want to have. But it's going to produce for you. You're going to have a place for a vegetable garden. You're going to have fruit trees and berry bushes and maybe some strawberry plants as a ground cover. You're going to have all of these things. You're going to have your little workshop where you're able to you know, create things and just one of my goals is to have an outdoor kitchen, and it may not be this year, it may be next year, but I would like to be able to have an outdoor kitchen with a gas cooktop. That way when we're doing canning, we can do it outside and not heat up the house. In the long term, that's going to save us a lot of money because of the cooling costs associated with heating up your kitchen so much when you're canning. Now, generally, people that are just homeowners, why, they would never can. Okay? So, and I know that right now, and I understand it, and I support it, there's a big push for permaculture. Now, I love permaculture. Permaculture is, it's a design system that tries to put in permanent food-bearing elements into a person's property. Now, what the heck do I mean by that?
That's your fruit trees, that's your strawberries, that's your grapevines, your kiwis, muscadines, nut trees, things like that. One of the problems that I have with some of the permaculture people is they're so focused on the permanent things that they don't talk about the annual vegetable garden. Now, you can grow a heck of a lot of stuff. In fact, for the square foot, you can grow more calories with a fruit, a nut tree, or some berry bushes than you can with a couple of tomato plants. But for most of us, our diet cannot be complete just with the long-term production items. We have to have that vegetable garden in order to round out our diet. So when what I do with mine, and actually my wife, she got on to me because I wasn't planning on planting corn this year at all. Now, we like sweet corn and we like niblet corn, and man, I like fried corn. If you don't know what fried corn is, it is field corn, open pollinated corn, real starchy corn. It's not real sweet. And like Mosby's or Hickory King or Trucker's Favorite. Those are the three that we've grown all my life. It's one of those things that you can save your seeds. It's not a hybrid. It's an open pollinated, it's called a dent corn, okay? Now, if you get it before it gets dry, before the kernels turn hard, you can cut it off the cob just like you would cream corn, and you throw it in a cast iron skillet. You add some flour and some butter and some milk, and you actually fry that corn, pan fried. Okay, man, it's good, especially with you some cornbread or some fresh loaf bread. Woo, it's good stuff. All right. So my wife's wanting to add another garden bed to our property. Now, here's the kicker. Okay, I've already got the backyard all planned out. And I'm like, baby, where are we going to plant it? She said, plant it in the front yard. I'm like, you're okay with me planting corn in the front yard? Oh, yeah! All right. So, a homestead, it helps you. It helps sustain you. You're not simply sustaining it. It's sustaining you. The time that you invest into it, it gives you a return. Now, a homestead, in my opinion, is a much better investment than just a home. Because when you take a half-acre property, okay, with a nice little home, a modest home, say, I don't know about national averages, but we're going to say $125,000 half-acre with a nice home, okay? Not a McMansion, not anything like that, just a nice little home. And you've got to do something with the yard, because if you've ever seen a yard where there's no trees, there's no bushes, there's no flowers, it's just flat grass, it's boring, okay? The term comes to mind, it's vanilla, it's bland. Now, if vanilla is your favorite flavor, great and wonderful. If it's not, then you definitely understand what I'm saying. Vanilla's good, it's just not great. So, I've actually only seen like two pieces of property that the entire property was just grass. And I'll be honest, it looked weird. Now, if you've got that half acre piece of property and it's just grass, generally, people go, okay, well, we got to put some trees in, we got to put some bushes in, we've got to do something to break up this monochrome looking landscape. And they'll go and they'll get a Bradford pear, or they'll get a flowering cherry, or a flowering pistachio, or any of these things. These are trees that have been selectively bred to not produce fruit. Okay? Now, that drives me crazy. And I'll just tell you straight out, the Bradford pear is not a good tree. I cannot tell you the number. Now, it's real pretty in the spring, but I cannot tell you the number of Bradford pear trees that I've seen just break and just fall apart. In fact, my neighbor kind of across the way, last fall, we had a little bit of a windstorm, and half of her beautiful Bradford pear tree just broke and just, I mean, it's ugly now. She said she's going to get her son to come cut it down as soon as she gets a chance. I offered to do it, but she said no, she wanted to make him do it. Okay? Now, why not, instead of putting a worthless tree, okay, now, and that's my opinion, Bradford pear is a worthless tree. Why not put a real pear tree there? It's still going to have the pretty flowers in the springtime, but it's going to produce you fruit. Now, I realize that we've come to the point to where there are so many people out there that just don't want to I just don't want to mess with it. I don't want to mess with it. I don't want to have to deal with it. Ah! Seriously? By putting in... Okay. Here's my plan. I'm going to tell you my plan. Okay? Now, on the front part of our property, closest to the road, okay, I've already kind of drawn it off. I'm going to put in some fruit trees far enough back off the road that we're not on the, oh my God, right away. And we're going to put some fruit trees on there. I'm going to lay my cardboard down around the trunks, and then I'm going to mulch the hound out of it. Okay? And with that mulch, I'm going to mix in some good quality topsoil. And then I'm going to, on the south side of those trees, I'm going to put them all in a line. I'm going to have them coppiced off at about 8, maybe 9 foot. Now, I had originally thought about making it into a living fence. I know I have. I've talked about a living fence before. Well, I've changed my mind. I'm going to leave them be bushy. But I don't want them getting so tall that I can't harvest the fruit right off the top. So, you know, the trees are going to wind up, I don't know, probably 4 or 6 foot wide all the way around, but they're only going to be about 8 foot tall. So they're going to look a little odd, but I'm going to graft everything that I take off the top down on the bottom. That way we have branches really close to the ground. And I'm going to mulch them real heavy. And on the south side of those trees, just right where the shade sunshine line starts, I'm going to plant strawberries. Now, strawberries make an excellent ground cover. They will produce for nearly flipping ever. Now, they will produce real heavy, really large berries like their second year. After that, they'll put out runners, and then they'll live like 1 or 2 years more, and then they'll die, and then they'll be replaced. But they make a really good ground cover. That's going to help control the grass, plus all the mulch. It's going to eventually wind up being a carpet on the south side of those trees of strawberries. Okay? Now, on the north side of those trees, I'm going to plant my leafy vegetables. I'm going to plant my leaf lettuces, my cabbages, my regular lettuces, kale, spinach, things like that. May even do broccoli and some of those other things. Now, why would I do that? Well, those are actually more cool weather crops. They have a hard time in the bright sunlight and in the heat of the summertime. So by giving them that mottled shade, and that shade in the hottest parts of the day, it will extend their growing season. It will keep them from going to seed or bolt. It'll help them do that for a lot longer and produce more for my family. And then, you know, some of them are so easy to seed. Black seeded Simpson's so easy that you just let that stem go up and you let the flowers come out. And as it's starting to turn brown a little bit, you cut it off with your pair of nippers and you stick it in a paper sack and you just beat it around, and there's seeds falling all in the bottom of your bag. And then you got seeds for next year and you're not having to buy your seeds again. Now, on top of that, though, we're going to be adding a 4 to 4 by 6 foot bed in the front yard. That's where our corn's going to be. Now, I'm going to plant my onions and my carrots in that bed with corn. Carrots don't have to have a lot of sunlight. They're one of those things that can't handle the heat real well. They do reasonably okay, but they're not as bad as the lettuce, but they're not as good as some of the other plants as far as dealing with the heat. Okay? So the carrots will actually be in the amongst of the corn, and then the onions will be around the perimeter. And I'll scatter some herbs and stuff like that in there to help bring beneficial insects, predator insects. So by putting a little thought process into it, you can create something that's pretty that produces for you. Now, why would I consider that an investment? Well, some of you are going, well, because it's giving you food. Come on, everybody knows that. And then some of you are going, yeah, why is it an investment? Well, those pretty trees, if ever we get to the point to where we decide we're going to sell, they're going to increase the property value. They say that about the Bradford pears, but I just don't believe it anymore because everybody's realizing how bad a tree they are. Okay? So by putting in fruit-bearing trees, that increases the property rate. By putting in the berry bushes and everything like that, actually kind of creating a micro food forest almost. But we're skipping the fruit trees will be the canopy layer, and we're skipping the shrub layer and going right to the ground cover. Okay? And we'll talk about all that in more detail later. But not only does it increase the property value, it also gives you a residual benefit in the form of your food. Now, if you want to break that down into like investment terms, all of a sudden your yard starts giving you a dividend. Now, a dividend, for anybody who might not know, is when you own stock in a company and they give a portion of their earnings to their stockholders as an income. Okay, it's to increase the people wanting their stock, which helps drive up their stock prices. Okay, now I've got some stock in Lowe's, and I'll just be honest with you, Lowe's has never failed to issue a dividend since I've had it. So we get a trickle of income, you know, about every quarter. Well, if you've increased your food sovereignty on your own place and you've put in these food systems, the trees, the bushes, the berry plants, the annual gardens, all like that, then every time that you go out there and you harvest an onion because you need one for what you're cooking, every time you go out there and you pick strawberries to make some jam or a pie or ice cream or whatever you're doing, you've collected a dividend. And I'll go into how I figure everything a bit later. I'm actually trying to work on the notes now. So you can change your home into a homestead. You can change it from a consumer into a producer. Now, not only is a homestead a producer, it also creates a heritage. Now, what do I mean by that? When you have just a home and you have a yard, okay, there are still some wonderful times to be had in just a basic yard. Especially if you got like a big oak tree and you have a tree house or whatever, and you have swings and people play football in the yard and all of this. There's some wonderful times to be had there. There's some great memories that can be created there. But it has been my experience, and I've actually lived on both types of places while I was growing up. I've mentioned in the past, my dad was a pastor. Well, we wound up leaving our home where I spent most of my childhood and moved to a place in, well, it was a subdivision. And we weren't allowed to have a garden. Or we didn't. I don't know. And I didn't have a connection to that property near like I did the place where we got out and we got our hands in the dirt. By teaching children or grandchildren the joys of putting your hands in the dirt, of being closer to creation, it creates a heritage in them. It empowers them to look at the world through a different light. When you plant a seed in the ground and it sprouts and it grows and then it produces for you, that is the perfect example of sound investing. It's also the perfect example of reciprocation. Now, what's reciprocation? Reciprocation is basically, well, the Bible talks about it, but it doesn't call it that. It says, give and it shall be given unto you. Okay? So, when you give something, then you set in motion a natural law. When you plant a seed, you set in motion a natural law that's going to give back to you if at all possible. If you put a seed in the right environment, if you put it in the soil and it's got some moisture and it's got the right temperature and it's got sunlight, you can do everything else that you can. You can scream at it, you can yell at it, you can play loud music, you can do all this stuff, but that seed is designed to grow. So your homestead creates a heritage. It's a producer. It creates a heritage. It's an investment. It creates a dividend for you. And let's just be honest, it gives you a sense of security that goes beyond just a home. Now, like I said, I've lived in both. I've lived in both as a child and as an adult. I've lived in a home where I didn't have a garden. I'm embarrassed to say that, but it's true. And I've lived in a home where I have had a garden. And the home where I have the garden every single time is more comfortable to me. Even if it's the exact same place, just one season or one year later, knowing that I have a garden there, knowing that I can go out and I can walk through the tomatoes, that I can look at the peppers, that I can check on the cucumbers, that I can gather the squash, that I can give away zucchini, makes me feel better. Because it's natural. I believe it's natural for everybody. But we've been so far removed that we've forgotten what's natural. So, to me, That's the difference between a home and a homestead. One's a producer, one's a consumer. One's a status symbol, one's a heritage. Both of them are investments, but one's an investment that produces dividends. One increases your food security, and one does nothing. And if you think about it, the homestead that produces food for you actually helps you make its own payments. Because everything that you're able to eat off of that property is less money that you'll have to spend buying the stuff that your land's producing for you, and that's more money that you can put on the pavement to get it paid off. Why wouldn't you do this? Why wouldn't anybody do this? I don't care if you've got a 10th acre or 10 acres. Allowing, and it really is allowing. Now, is it work? Heck yeah, it's work. But I've got a podcast coming up that's going to help you make it less work. Okay? But yeah, it's work. But the land is actually working for you, and you're working with it, and it's helping you make its own payment. Well, Jim, I hope that helped you out. I hope I didn't sound too much like a preacher. I think I did, but that's just, it's means something to me. It's important to me. And send me your questions. I love them. TheRuralEconomist@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook. Once again, the same thing, The Rural Economist. Just look us up, like the Facebook page, check out what we got going on. I use my Facebook peeps as a research center a lot of times. I'll ask them questions, and they'll give me a bunch of answers. And a lot of times I'll roll them all into a podcast or a blog post. But I really appreciate you. If you enjoyed this, share it and give us a rating. Give us a review. Okay? Well, I hope you have a wonderful day. I hope you're planting your garden. I hope you turn your home into a homestead, because it will pay you back. Step by step, we're bringing rural back. Bye-bye.